Hello and welcome to the Hoop Collective Podcast. We talk about the NBA. It's Thursday afternoon. Joining me from Boston, Massachusetts, his former stomping grounds, where he was at the Celtics all-access game against the Cleveland Cavaliers on Wednesday night, where the Celtics talk about a backdoor cover for the Cavs on that one, Bontemps. I think it was a five and I don't know what the halftime lines were. It was a 5.5-point spread, and the Cavs slinked into a 3-point loss.
3 weeks apart, the Cavs played two contenders in the East, were blown out for large portions of the game, and then raced back to make it close at the end. So I've seen this script before.
Yeah.
And hello, everybody.
Hello, Tim Bontemps. Joining us from Dallas, Texas, where I'm headed this weekend. My first game in Dallas since the pre-pandemic. I'm going to be in Ban McMahon's stomping grounds. Better be ready for me, Mr. McMahon.
Howdy, partners. We've got dinner reservations for Saturday night, taking you to the finest steakhouse in Dallas, Nick and Sam's.
Don't Rick say Carlisle, where we're going to be. Don't say where we're going to be.
I don't well, there's much more important. There'll be many more important people than us there, dude. Trust me.
Well, that may be true, but, you know, I moved.
Oh, Wendy, you're not that important. Shut up.
You know, yesterday I missed the start of Monty Williams' press conference postgame because I had to take pictures of so many fans after the game. You may think that's conceited, but I'm just telling you the truth.
Oh, Lord have mercy. Half of them
called me Adrian. I will tell you that yesterday in Charlotte, I took photos with at least three people who called me Adrian. They said, Adrian, I'm a big fan. I'm like, clearly. Okay. So I was in Charlotte for Kevin Durant's first game. We're going to be with McMahon on Sunday. They play Friday night in Chicago, but Sunday is hopefully a big one. Hopefully everybody stays healthy. McMahon, you've got a game tonight. The Mavericks are hosting the 76ers on the second night of a back-to-back for Philly. So we'll see how that goes. Mavericks, I would advise them to win that one as a side note. We'll talk about the Suns. Catching them on a back-to-back, and it's an early start, too, right? 6:30 Central.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Doc did not seem too thrilled with the scheduling, but neither here nor there.
All right. This one is pump. The pump is primed for the Mavericks to get a win here. So let's see what happens.
But anyway,
for the Suns, you know, it was hard to make an honest evaluation of their actual strategy and play. We'll talk about it a little bit, but they're playing the Hornets. They're playing the Hornets without LaMelo Ball. The Hornets had won five in a row, and they did have some stretches in the game where they played interesting. Kelly Oubre was just firing up shots. At one point, I think he was 3 of 16. So that's the kind of team that they were playing, just to be honest. They got up 11-0, the Suns did, and they won by 13, or maybe they won by 14. So just keep that in mind. Okay, having said that, I have to tell you, as much as they try to not show their emotion, Devin Booker and Kevin Durant are absolutely giddy about this partnership. And Booker was saying stuff like, it was unreal, or I couldn't believe it was real watching him out there. And I can't believe how easy his shots come, as if he's never seen him shoot before. But like, that's the thing about Durant. His game is kind of timeless. I've covered his whole career. I've watched him in the finals with the Thunder. I've watched him in the finals in person, you know, with the Warriors, with Team USA, with the Nets. I've interviewed him in all these situations and all these different uniforms and all these different places all over the country, all over the world. And it is the same game. Guess what? He came out and hit a bunch of silky smooth 18 to 20 footers. This is what he does. He went 10 of 15 shooting in the game. And he was like, there are about four shots I should have made. He said that. But Booker was like, he couldn't hide his smile after this game. He was effusive. You know, usually when you ask Devin questions, he will answer it in sort of the minimum number of words. He was like going on and on and on. And the smile on his face was just, he couldn't suppress it. And Durant even said that he was nervous, which I mean, we have to have Nick Friedel on to verify, you know, from all the Warriors and Nets days. I don't remember Durant saying he was nervous too often. He admitted he was nervous. He was nervous because it's a big freaking deal. And they have some flaws on the team, which we'll talk about in a minute. But I talked to Steve Clifford, the Hornets coach, before the game. And one of the things that he said was, okay, look, they're in any game plan that you're going to put up against them, especially in a playoff series, you're obviously the central part of your game plan is you're going to double Booker and you're going to double Durant. And so he didn't use these names specifically. I'm just extrapolating. So, you know, if they were playing this playoff game, you know, if Kevin Durant is on the same side of the court as Torrey Craig or the same side of the court as Josh Okogie, obviously, if there's an action for Durant, you're double teaming Durant and you're saying pass the ball to Torrey Craig. But the thing that Clifford was saying is that in the end of games, be they regular season games or playoff games, it's very hard to handle both of them in a strategic situation like that. And so in this game, Durant played 27 minutes and scored 24 points or 23 points. Booker scored 37 and had 7 assists. It was a good game for Booker. He, you know, is now totally off the minute restriction that he had for the hamstring and the groin injury. That 1-2 punch is going to carry them a real long way. The other thing I thought was interesting.
What a point. Devin Booker and Kevin Durant are going to carry the Suns a long way. I'm glad we got there.
Of course.
Glad we got there.
He's warming up, Bontemps.
The other thing that was key, I think, Monty Williams right out of the gate had Durant with 4 bench players to start the second and the fourth quarters. He played four 6-minute shifts, and they let him finish. And he played half of those minutes of those shifts with 4 bench players. And in both times, again, against the Hornets, but both times the lead expanded. I think in those 2 shifts, Durant was in the neighborhood of like plus 14 or plus 15. So they've got Paul and Booker on the bench and they're extending the lead. Won't happen every night, but that's another thing. And that's what Booker said after the game. We're going to have either have me or Kevin on the court at all times, which is helpful in the regular season and also helpful in the playoffs when you're probably only going to be playing 7 and a half players in games that really matter. So, Bontemps, I know you weren't able to watch the game because you were covering your, I didn't see the Cavs-Celtics game, so I'm in the same boat when we talk about that. But they started Josh Okogie as the 5th starter. Monty refused to say who he was going to do it till literally they had announced the starting lineups. Okogie had averaged 19 points since the Durant trade when he moved into the starting lineup. He scored 4 last night, and 2 of them was on a garbage time free throws where they fouled to stop the clock. So a little bit worrisome there, but this is a multi-year effort for the Suns, and this was the first start. So, okay, I monologued enough, Bontemps. I don't know what you got to see, but
I mean, I watched parts of the game. I had it on while I was at Celtics Cavs. I saw the opening quarter when I saw the Charlotte Hornets look like a truly horrendous team, which they are, especially without LaMelo Ball. And the Suns went up 11-0 and looked like they were playing a varsity JV game. And, you know, obviously cruise from there. I mean, ironically, because I was at the Celtics Cavs game, I think the Suns really are just a better version of the Cavs. They've got 4 players that I really like and can really count on. And then they've got 11 question marks, just like the Cavs. Now, obviously their talent at the top end is obviously superior. Devin Booker and Kevin Durant might be the best 1-2 combo in the league. But, you know, like you said, Josh Okogie is their 5th starter. That's not really going to be good enough, I don't think, when they're playing at the highest level. They don't have anybody to guard elite perimeter players. I think that's going to be a problem at the highest level. But Kevin Durant and Devin Booker could score 70, 80 points on anybody. DeAndre Ayton has continued to improve. We'll see what Chris Paul can give them. He has been up and down as this year has gone along, but you've got Kevin on the court. Hopefully these guys can stay healthy and, you know, it'll be very interesting to see what they look like when they start to play some real teams, because again, especially without LaMelo Ball, this Hornets team is just not real competition. So, you know, let's see Sunday when they play Dallas. That I'll be very interested to see what that game looks like.
I'm not as worried about depth as everybody else. I mean, like you said, Wendy, they're playing 7, maybe 8 guys per game in the playoffs. You know, KD, Booker, those guys, their minutes are going to be in the high 30s. if not into the 40s. To me, this is going to be about how good is Chris Paul, right? And we know he can run an offense. And with those two guys plus DeAndre Ayton, he's going, like, he had 11 assists last night. That's going to be on a regular basis. I don't know that they can make playoff runs if he's got a whole lot of 2.1 of 8 performances. I do think he's going to have more points than turnovers on a regular basis for the Suns to get through the Western Conference.
And well, then, let's see how he can hold up on defense too, right? Because, I mean, he's going to be targeted by a lot of these teams with elite perimeter players. They're playing against playing against Golden State. Let's see how he handles that.
I think he's going to be targeted at both ends. I wonder if they're going to, if he's continuing to shoot this poorly, I'm wondering if they're laying off Torrey Craig and Koji, and they're also laying off Chris Paul.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'd certainly be making him shoot instead of, you know, if I could prevent Kevin Durant and Devin Booker from shooting, I'd be happy to let anybody else shoot.
Yeah. And then, you know, DeAndre Ayton's obviously going to be a huge wild card, and, you know, his shots, it makes sense that his shots will go down, but they need him to be an efficient, and I'm not going to say a dominant interior presence, but at least a forceful interior presence. You know, last night, 16 and 16, you know, you'll take that on a regular basis. I think it's fair to say kind of his intensity tends to ebb and flow. They're going to need the best version of DeAndre Ayton, which, look, I do think that he's been undervalued. We've talked about this before. I think he's been undervalued by the Suns. You know, all the wrestling and posturing it took for him to finally get that max deal, but he needs to earn that money now.
Yeah. He's the only other player that scored in double figures last night. So,
that's going to be the case a lot, I think.
Yeah. So Terrence Ross was out with a toe injury. Look, in my view, depending on who their opponents are playing, maybe Jock Landale, who's their backup center, maybe he plays, maybe he doesn't. To me, Cameron Payne's role may, you know, ebb and flow a little bit, but to me, it's their starters. It's those four guys, three possible Hall of Famers. I mean, Chris Paul and DKD are in. Booker's got a good chance. Ayton. And then to me, it's Okoji, Torrey Craig, Terrence Ross. Can they get, in a 7-game series, can they get 1.5 of those guys to deliver defense, effective defense? And Craig and Okoji are defensive specialists. They're not going to be on the all-defensive team, but they are defensive specialists, and Craig has good length. He's 2 or 3 inches taller than Okoji. Can they get from those three guys? Are they going to provide enough? That's going to be a big factor. And by the way, the answer might be no. I'm not arguing that they can. The answer might be no. But the difference here, it's a huge difference between the Sun situation and the Mavericks situation. The Mavericks, we all agree, they don't have enough. But we don't know whether they're going to get to add before Kyrie walks. With the Suns, this is the beginning of a medium-term marriage. I did think it was interesting. Mm-hmm. I wrote this in my story that was on ESPN, that it was ironic that they were in Charlotte for this game where the Durant-Kyrie betrothal happened by their own admission during the 2019 All-Star weekend, where they were famously caught on that wall.
I walked by while they were talking at the game. I was thinking about it last night. I was walking, they were going to the halls. I saw them talking, and I was like, oh, that's kind of interesting. Kevin and Kyrie are having this conversation over here in the corner.
And I will say this, like, by the way, Kevin was very, I talked about Booker. Kevin was excited post game too. Mm-hmm. He was, you know, there was light in his eyes post game. And, you know, I was thinking to myself, going with Booker, I don't know if it'll work. It's a lot better bet than going with Kyrie because is kind of the opposite of Kyrie.
You don't
say. Booker, the only thing he cares about is basketball. Like he sometimes his dating life makes it into the
tablet. And low riders.
I don't even know how many of those cars he's got because I've seen him in photographs in a lot.
He's got a few. Got some nice rides.
Yeah. But anyway, he's totally focused on the game. Total no nonsense. You know, the opposite of kind of possible distractions that Kyrie has. He's younger, he's bigger, and he's, you know, he doesn't have the pedigree that Kyrie has, but he's, you know, just sort of getting into the prime of his career.
Mm-hmm.
And so here's, I'm watching the beginning of the new marriage, so to speak, in the same building where the old one. And so like, it's going to be a multi-year thing. Now, whether Chris Paul's going to be in that for those years, that's very much open.
TBD, right. And same with DeAndre Ayton, despite the fact he's on a long-term deal. Like if they're looking to, you know, alter the roster around their two superstars, then DeAndre Ayton very well could end up getting moved. But, you know, for right now, those are they've got a big two and then a, I don't know what you want to call the other two.
Well, they got a big two, and then they've got pieces they can move around.
A four-man core.
That's right. That's right.
Well, yeah, by the way,
those two guys.
Before I forget, Wendy, I feel like you've been highly disrespectful of 44% three-point shooter and NBA champion Damian Lee, especially after running into his father-in-law last night.
I'm just saying,
don't count.
Well, look, I mean, he actually hasn't been playing that much recently, but in an individual playoff game or two, he's a guy they can go to. I just don't know if you can count on him, but he's won them games this year.
Hey, he won them. When I'm sitting there watching and he hits a turnaround fadeaway for the game winner. Like people are asking, who's getting the last shot? Booker, KD? Well, I mean, come on. I've seen Damian Lee, the game winner, baby.
I'd rather have Damian Lee playing than Terrence Ross. I'll just say that right now.
I don't want to get into like a long-winded discussion about the seventh or eighth man of the Suns. Let me just say that whenever I see coaches or media or people talk about, well, what about this 9-man rotation? Or, you know, how is he going to cut the rotation to 10? It's like, that's the thing. Monty's playing like 11 or 12 guys right now. Winning is an everyday mindset. And on the Ways to Win podcast, coaches Craig Robinson and John Calipari are here to help. Each week, Craig and Coach Cal use their on-court wisdom to solve your off-court problems. Whether it's trouble at home or a workplace dilemma, the coaches will help you find a winning formula for success. And you'll hear from prominent athletes, business leaders, and celebrities who reveal insights that made them into the leaders they are today. Like President Obama, who breaks down his bracket and talks about how he deals with pressure by projecting confidence, believing in your team, and taking criticism. Listen to Ways to Win wherever you get your podcasts. Now let's talk about the play of the week, the pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavily on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liquor, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. Pat Riley rings in my ears. When the bleep gets real, you play 8 and trust 7.
Yeah.
When it's 2-2 in game 5, when you're down 2-1 in game 4, you're playing 8 and trusting 7.
And that requires you to have 7.
Yeah, wow. Mike D'Antoni math, and you go back to some of the Suns' glory days. It was play 7 and trust 6.
Wow, oh my god!
7 seconds or less, and 7 players or less in the rotation.
To have 6 guys you trust, which the Suns.
I go back to the 2016 Warriors, 73-win team, greatest regular season of all time. By the end of that series, Kerr was playing 7 and trusting 4. You know, because Bogut got hurt, but he had nowhere to play at the end of that thing. So like, again, when it gets down to the end, like, you know, things get real tight. So about times your point is fine. I'm just saying it's not all in this year for the Suns. They still have time and they got an owner who's going to pay the tax. So
I agree. I mean, it's a very significant point to point out that it's a massive difference between where the Mavs are, as one example, where Kyrie could easily leave in 3 months and it could be left holding the bag, or you've got Kevin Durant locked in for 4 years and you've got him and Devin Booker together. That's unquestionably true. The problem is all I hear every day is people asking, oh, are the Suns the favorite to win the title? Are the Suns the favorite to win the West? This is, they're the clear, obvious pick. I just flatly don't think that's the case because, again, you've got a bunch of guys with injury concerns. We'll see if they can all stay on the court, you know, knock on wood. I certainly hope they can. And when you, like you said, you need to have seven guys you trust in the playoff series. They've got two, probably three with DeAndre Ayton. I don't know how Chris Paul's going to be by then. We saw in the Dallas series, he was a shell of himself for a large portion of that series by the end of it. And then you've got, you know, again, you're picking from a, you know, roulette from a bunch of mediocre to bad wing options that you would feel better if they were your ninth or 10th guy and you maybe played one of them. Instead, they've got to play all of them. So, you know, if you're going up against Golden State, you're going up against the Clippers, you're going up against Dallas, you're going up against Memphis or Denver, all these teams with big time offenses, like, yeah, maybe Phoenix will outscore them all, but that's typically not how things work in the playoffs.
Also, there are a couple of teams in the league who would feel comfortable playing Booker and Durant one-on-one and living with it. You know, and so
Clippers, who?
Clippers.
Very many.
Boston.
Okay.
Milwaukee.
You know, so you know, Durant doesn't.
I mean, last night's a good example. I mean, obviously they're playing the Hornets, who stink, but they scored 105 points. They had three guys in double figures, right? Like, if you go into a playoff series and you're a high-level team, I think that's the blueprint to beat these guys. It's like, hey, let Devin and Kevin shoot, you know, let them shoot a ton of times, let them score. We're not going to give up open threes to these other guys, right? We're just going to guard everybody straight up. And if those guys could score 100 points by themselves, maybe they'll win. But they're probably going to score 70. And in today's NBA, we probably could get to 115. And I don't know if they're going to be able to get to 115 regularly in the playoffs against real teams. So we'll see.
Definitely going to be something we're watching. And then obviously Sunday, that'll be very interesting with Matt and I'll be there. So right now the Suns are in the fourth seed. In the fifth seed, somehow.
I can tell you how. Go ahead.
Well, yeah, because the team was in the fifth seed, was in reverse, right?
We're talking about the Warriors. They kept their heads above water, to their credit, without Steph. And, dude, you're looking at, like, I'm just looking at the standings. You go to the last 10 games, the Clippers, the Mavericks, the Wolves, the Jazz, all 4-6. Nobody below 5 in the West is above 500 in their last 10 games. You had teams that had this opportunity with the Warriors down, not just Steph, but Wiggins, and weren't able to do anything with it.
Not only that, the Warriors went past them all.
Yeah, even exactly.
Like, just forget just like maintaining where they were down in the play-in. Now they're out of the play-in.
Well, the Clippers are playing the Warriors tonight. We're not going to know how that turns out by the time this comes out. It's in San Francisco, so I like the Warriors' chances. I remain mystified by the Clippers. By the way, they didn't Westbrook hasn't played that bad.
Well, hold on. Let's stop right there. What did we all say last Friday on the pod when we talked about the Clippers? If Russell Westbrook comes in and has a small targeted role, he could potentially help them win some games. Instead, you were aghast at the idea he might start last week. He's starting. Ooh. He's playing heavy minutes. He's out there in crunch time. Teams are doubling off him to guard Kawhi and these other guys, and they're losing games and throwing the ball all over the yard. Like, this has been
and a disaster. They're playing 4-on-5 defensively because he gets lost. He's like, you know, a kid at an amusement park. There's all these bright lights going on. Oh, wait, we were in the wrong line.
It's just staggering to me that they've gone out and signed this guy who was playing across the hall all year and causing all the same problems that are now causing them, and they plug him right in the starting lineup. He's playing all these minutes. It's just like, yeah, we're riding with Russ. It's amazing. They were rolling with Terrence Mann, and now they're doing this.
That's the point. Okay, that's the point I want to talk about real quick, even though we're supposed to talk about the Warriors here. I believe, if I have this stat correct, that in the last 12 games, that Terrence Mann...
They were 10-4 with Terrence Mann starting, coming into the stretch with Russ.
Okay, but I think it was 10-2 in the previous 12 when Mann started with Kawhi and Paul George. And Mann played one of his best games of the year. They went into Phoenix and won. He had one of his best games of the season right before they went to the All-Star break, and then he did the signing. And now, like, Eric Gordon, who he's been turning the ball over too, but that was already a challenge bringing Eric Gordon in and integrating him. Eric Gordon's now barely playing. In fact, I don't think, and again, this is going to be a little stale because they're playing tonight, but the other night, I don't think Eric Gordon played at all in the second half. So you've disturbed Gordon. You've disturbed Terrence Mann. You've totally changed the way your team's going to play. Like, by the way, even if Russ was playing perfect basketball, when you alter who the point guard is 55 or 60 games into the season, you're going to have fallout from that. You don't just change up your point guard this deep into the season and right when you've caught a rhythm. I mean, I remember Ty Lue lamenting like, you know, four or five weeks ago, like, I just wish we could have 10 games where we could be together. Mm-hmm. Well, they got those 10 games.
And now they've restarted again with this team. That doesn't make sense.
Yeah. Or if you're going to change your point guard because you do feel like it's a need, then you do it with a guy who doesn't need to dominate the ball to be effective. You do it with a guy who is perfectly comfortable, you know, getting you into your offense, getting the big dogs the ball and playing off of them, which is, those are the point guards that they were targeting in the trade market. And then they went the opposite direction when Russ became available for a buyout.
No question.
Well, I don't know. Maybe Russ have a triple double tonight. Anyway.
We've also got as of this moment, hot off the presses, LeBron James injury update. Would you like me to read you the injury update, Brian?
The Lakers just put out a press release. I read it, but please read it since it's in front of you.
LeBron James has been evaluated by the Lakers team, physicians, and medical staff, and it has been determined that he has sustained a right foot tendon injury, and he will be reevaluated in approximately 3 weeks.
Three weeks is a long time in March when you're in 12th
and
place.
And I will remind everyone, obviously they'll be listening to this tomorrow, but when teams say someone will be reevaluated in three weeks, that does not mean they're going to be playing 3 weeks from today. That means that they'll be looked at again in 3 weeks.
And also, I think part of the evaluation is going to be, hey,
where are we
in the standings? I'm looking forward to the NBA Today.
The New Orleans Pelicans just entered the chat, by the way.
Yes. I'm looking forward to the NBA Today segment that says, if not for that pesky regular season, would the Lakers have won the championship this year? And then everybody absolutely, they would have. Absolutely.
Well, I'm on NBA Today.
Tristan
Thompson, my good man who I've known for 12 years, is not, though. It'd be interesting to hear Tristan, who's been bullish on the Lakers.
Do we want to play the famous Mike and the Mad Dog game of going through the schedule and seeing where the Lakers may potentially be in 3 weeks?
Well,
I have the schedule
this.
Right here.
How many games is Anthony Davis going to play? Because he sat out a back-to-back. I don't quite know what happened there.
There's one back-to-back in their next 12 games.
They've got two left on the season.
Yeah.
Okay. Run us through, because we got to figure out how many tankers they've got on that.
Okay.
On that
schedule. So they have Minnesota at home Friday tonight. When you're listening, I'd say that's probably a loss.
By the way, D'Angelo Russell going to play anytime soon?
He's probably going to come back Friday, play against his old team. I don't. You trust Minnesota to say that they can win? I mean, they probably can win.
There's nothing definite there, but I trust Wolves a little bit more than I trust these Lakers.
We'll say 0-1. Golden State on Sunday afternoon at home. Is Steph going to play then?
I don't think so. He's probably next.
So we'll say that's a win. We'll give him a win there. 1-1. Memphis at home. Say that's a loss, right?
Ooh, depends on if Shannon Sharp sitting courtside. I don't know.
Are we agreeing that's a loss?
Yeah,
I told you. I also like what kind of cardigans you got on.
Memphis just won their first road game in like 6 weeks, but you know, let's be honest.
It'll probably be too warm in LA for a cardigan at that point, though.
Got the absolutely streaking Knicks coming in next Sunday. That's a loss.
You skipped right over those.
I skipped the Raptors game. They have the Raptors Friday and the Knicks Sunday, both at home.
Okay, at New Orleans.
Those are probably losses. At New Orleans?
No, I'd say they split.
So we'll say they're 2-3.
If they can go 2-3 in that stretch, they're doing well.
Okay. Right. At New Orleans?
Loss.
2-4. At Houston? Win. 3-4. Home for Dallas?
Depends. Can the Mavericks get up at least 28?
we'll give the Mavs a win in that one. So 3-5. Orlando at home.
Orlando's been playing well for a while now.
Orlando should stop it.
Well, we'll see.
They got to win that game, or this conversation's over.
Well, I think they're losing it, but we'll go with Brian. Brian's the home. Right, they win 4-5. Then they have the Suns, 4-6. They have the Thunder, which again is a toss-up game. Shea is playing; it's a loss.
They just won in Oklahoma City last night without AD.
I understand. That's but Shea
give them the win. Give them the win.
I'm doing that for a reason.
Okay.
Because you're a company man trying to make sure we have Laker talk.
No, I want to see the best case scenario. I want to see what case scenario.
I've sensed the Thunder's motivation has gone south recently. Been some these injuries are starting to pop up. They always have health trouble, like right around February, March.
The bottom line is that's through the evaluation day for LeBron, which would be 3 weeks. It's really 10 games, but we'll count the Thunder game. So if we go with Brian's very generous interpretation, they are 5-6. Through those 11 games without LeBron.
We got five out of that?
That's not going to get it done.
You're also giving a win against the Raptors or the Knicks, who both have been playing much better, and the Magic, who've been an over 500 team for months, and the Warriors on Sunday, which Steph could play. Like, that's
if they go five and six and somehow LeBron is ready to come back, they will still have a shot. Because I'm telling you, like, Minnesota scuffling, the Jazz, obviously their primary motivation is not to make the play-in. They're going to scuffle a little bit.
This is a race of teams trying not to make the playoffs at this point. Everyone from like four on is basically trying not to make the playoffs in the West. It's amazing.
That's not true.
Minnesota is trying to make the playoffs.
I was making a joke about how badly they're all playing. I know they're obviously these teams are trying.
Yeah, but
to make
also
the playoffs.
Portland, who's behind them, is trying to make the playoffs.
Yeah, I was making a joke that everyone is stuck for weeks. That's all.
That is true.
Terrible joke.
Clearly, the concept of getting to Darvin Ham is the declaration of getting to six. I think we can retire that talk. And
let's hope so.
We need to start talking about getting to 10.
We've done a great job with the Warriors talk so far, fellas.
We plan on the
Warriors. Well, we had significant news break during the park, to be fair.
We did.
All right. Before we talk about the Warriors, it's trivia time from Bob Temps.
Oh, yes.
It's trivia time.
Vivid Seats wants you to get to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seat Rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code HOOP. That's code HOOP, H-O-O-P. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Now it's time for a Hoop Collective Trivia.
So Kevin Durant last night, this is courtesy of my man Stats Williams, so I got to see at the All Access game Wednesday night. The Warriors, or not the Warriors, Kevin Durant had 23 points in his Suns debut, which led to this question. Who has scored the most points with their first team after being traded midseason?
Ever? Ever?
All of these answers are within the last 30 years, but yes.
Okay. I'm going to just guess Clyde the Glide.
He is not on the top five.
Not on the top five. All right.
Is it a star? I mean, is it a star player or is it like some bench player who made like 8 out of 9 threes and had
They are I believe, five all-star players on my list of five guys. Okay. One MVP.
Oh.
A dunk champion.
An MVP. God.
I'm a couple rookie of the year.
What about Shaquille O'Neal?
Not Shaq.
I'm struggling.
What about Stephon Marbury?
Not Marbury. I'm going to give you the teams they played for.
Rasheed Wallace.
Nope.
Okay, go ahead.
Back in those days,
Bulls, Clippers, Pistons, Nets, Rockets. Those are the teams of the five guys with their new teams.
Oh, Harden. No, Harden was traded preseason.
Harden was fourth. Tied for fourth, 32 points.
Was that an early season trade?
Yes.
Okay.
It was a month into the year, as you remember when he disappeared.
Harden to Brooklyn, not Harden. Brooklyn,
yes. Yes.
Okay.
Harden with the Nets.
He did come out Harden. Like his first game with the Rockets, he scored like 36 or something. It was like back when 36 was an accomplishment.
Yes.
You weren't totally off there.
That was the Nets pick. There's Bulls. Who is Clippers,
the Bulls? Not it ain't Vooch, is it?
Nope. This is a throwback.
It ain't when they traded for Ben Wallace.
Nope. Same time frame though. Fellow Michigan legend. State of Michigan legend, I should say. Co-worker.
Jalen Rose.
Jalen Rose has the record with 36 points when he got traded to Chicago in 2002.
I wonder if Jalen even knows that.
I'm pretty sure Jalen knows it. Matt made it clear that they had discussed it.
Oh, I see. Okay.
The other three names for brevity's sake are Dominique Wilkins, who had 34 in 1994. Jerry Stackhouse, who had 33 in 97, and Victor Oladipo, who had 32 points in his first game with the Rockets.
Ah.
Wow. I don't remember that at all.
I do remember the Rockets won like three or four right after that Harden trade, and then I think they've won three or four since. Stackhouse, that reminds me of one of the all-time great quotes around the trade deadline is when he said, "Hey, man, the check's cash in all 50 states and Canada."
Stackhouse is the centerpiece of my favorite story since I've been covering the NBA.
Kirk Snyder story?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's been told a hundred times.
We've told it on the pod 100 times, but it's the greatest story. Just look up Jerry Stackhouse and Kirk Snyder. You'll find the story.
He's told it. I think Love
it. It's everywhere. It's great.
Love Stackhouse. Wouldn't mess with him. Even before that.
No, okay, I've been on his bad side before, and it was not a comfortable place.
You're never the thing about McMahon, he's not afraid to get on people's bad side. I respect it, you know.
Yeah. My first interaction with Jerry when he covered the Nets, he was very unhappy with me. And then things got much better after that. But it's definitely an interesting, place to be. I love Jerry too. Yeah. He's a great dude.
He can give you a stare that can set you back.
And you hope a minute. You hope it stops with a stare.
All right. So we talked about the Warriors. They're in fifth place. Steph is going to come back in the next week. Andrew Wiggins is away from the team for personal reasons. Hopefully everything gets taken care of there. And so let's assume that at some point they will have their starting five back together. Where they finish in the standings doesn't really matter that much to me because all of the thing about their road record, to me, it's the same as their overall record. The reason that they're two games over 500 is because they've had all the injuries. The reason they're so bad on the road is probably because they can't defend. But I'm not, you know, if they end up as a five seed and they play the Suns, it would be a tremendous, incredible series. But they're going to have a tough road no matter what.
Can I tell you a little secret? I think we're going to see some pretty significant maneuvering down the stretch to be a six instead of a five.
Maybe. I mean, we'll see how it all shakes out.
You're going to fire up the Kings fan base because I drew their ire this week on.
Okay, I'm just saying. Listen, I'm all about those beam lighters. Love them.
Listen, our bosses are going to be certainly hoping there's significant maneuvering down the stretch because I think our bosses would love to see Suns Warriors in the West Finals on ESPN. I think that would be their choice.
And I would certainly, no disrespect to the Kings, but I would rather see the team that will be ending a playoff drought that can drive 16 years versus the team that just added a two-time finals MVP. If I'm looking at who I'm playing in the first round, I'd rather see Memphis in the second round than the Nuggets. No disrespect. That's just the way it is.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, ultimately, I think the Warriors probably like their chances against anybody in a seven-game series if they're healthy.
Look, I've been saying this for weeks. I'm picking Golden State. If they're healthy at the start of the playoffs, I'm picking them to win the West. I'm picking them to beat all these teams until they're beaten. They have the best lineup in the league by a significant amount that's been proven over the course of the year. And like you said, Brian, I understand the road struggles this year. But at the end of the day, if you have to pick a team to win a best out of seven and the Warriors are involved with all these other teams in the West, I don't trust any of these other teams to beat them. These guys have done it 1,000 times. None of these other teams have. So I'm not picking the Clippers or the Suns or the Denver or Memphis or, you know, Sacramento and any of these teams to beat them 4 out of 7 until I see somebody do it. But they've earned that at this point.
I agree. The thing is, Steph has a lot of experience coming back. You know, I say this about Durant. Steph has a lot of experience coming back from injuries midseason. He's unfortunately had a lot to deal with. This is a new injury, this shoulder injury, but it's not to his shooting shoulder, right? It was to his left shoulder. Right?
No, this isn't a shoulder. This is a leg.
Well, now he's dealing with the knee injury.
Yeah, the shoulder was the last injury. This is when, and I honestly forget which leg, but this is when he got hurt against the Mavericks.
That's right.
And it's a lot of big words for it's a lower leg injury.
Yeah, he dealt with.
We already had one big word on this pod when you started talking about extrapolation. So
yeah, I had never heard of that injury before. It's like to a non-weight bearing bone or something like that, or it was a tendon I'd never heard of.
It's a bone or a tendon. It's something.
I went to college for 8 years, so let me tell you. let me find the exact injury, and then I'll be able to break it down. Looking up Warriors.
Well, McMahon PR.
Shout out to Raymond Ritter. Hold on, I got it already. Be quiet. This is going to be a challenge for the old pronunciation game. He suffered partial tears to his superior tibiofibular ligaments and interosseous membrane. And I am highly
doubtful little that chance I pronounced you said the last
tibia tibiofibio. So you have a tibia in your leg and a fibula, the big the long
tibiofibular.
I know, but it's talking about the piece of tissue that connects those two bones. That's how ligaments.
Okay. Work. Okay, Doc.
Well, I mean, this is from high school biology here.
Oh, as well as a contusion to his left lower leg. And I can tell you that contusion means bruise.
There you go. Nice work. By the way, Raymond Ritter. We should for a second say that David Benner, the longtime PR guy for the Pacers, passed away this week. Awesome guy. We've all covered the league a long time. We dealt with Benner for a long time. He's a great dude. He's been dealing with cancer for a long time. That was very sad news this week. I just want to make sure we mentioned it on the pod.
He had a legendary dry sense of humor. Legendary dry sense of humor. You know, was around the Pacers for as long as anybody's actively been around any NBA team. I think he retired like about a year ago or so.
Yeah.
So.
Last year was his last year working. Worked for the Pacers 28 years and had a run as a sports writer before that. Covered the team.
Covered the Pacers early in Reggie's career too, yeah. But just was an awesome guy. Really,
do you think
really
the Mavericks will hire McMahon to
listen,
be there?
Mark Cuban does have it. I call it the Mark Cuban Sports Writer Retirement Home. Dwayne Price, formerly the Fort Star Telegram. Eddie Sefko, formerly of the Dallas Morning News. They're working for Mavs.com.
I don't foresee Mavs.com in McMahon's future.
I don't think my skill set necessarily is suited for that line of work.
Folks, we're going to go to an exclusive interview on Mavs.com of Luka Doncic and Tim McMahon. Take it away, gentlemen.
Cuban once did, he backed out of a promise to hire me as general manager. He promised to hire me. This is a true story. He promised to hire me as his general manager for $500,000 a year. It was an on-the-record promise. He said, if we cut Lamar Odom, I will hire you as general manager for $500,000 a year. They cut Lamar Odom 2 weeks later, and I ain't making $500,000. I can promise you that.
Well, that's below market value for a GM. So first off, I would have said,
okay, it's above deal. Market value for me, doofus. Who cares?
Well, you're negotiating like that, you'll never get anywhere in this business, McMahon. Can you imagine McMahon on the other end of the press conference? I mean, that would be amazing.
Yeah, he'd get himself fired in a week. It'd be great.
Yeah. He might as well offer you $5 million a year, McMahon, because he's never going to pay it to you. He's going to fire you within 2 weeks, too.
Well, and then I'll be like his last GM and the one before that and sue his butt.
Yeah, that's a whole nother topic. Anyway, rest in peace, Mr. Benner. They don't make him like that anymore. Before we go, I wanted to discuss the team that Bontemps saw last night, the Cavs. You wrote a piece on the Cavs today. This is a team I obviously watch very closely, a team I covered for most of my career. The thing here is how you parse this. The Cavs are definitely not one of the top three teams in the East. They want to believe that they are, but they just aren't. And as you mentioned, that game against Philly on the road right before the All-Star
break. Yeah, they played Philly 3 weeks ago, and they played Boston yesterday, and the games both went the exact same way.
Right. So here's the thing. That's okay. If the Cavs make the playoffs, they will have had a really good year. They absolutely should make the number four seed, and they're in trouble with that right now because the Knicks are hot, but the Knicks have to go west. The Knicks have a tougher schedule. If the Cavs get the four seed, it will be terrific. The Cavs have upward mobility with the improvement of Evan Mobley and all that stuff. The problem is that I don't know how the Cavs are going to get better than this year. So like,
well,
if they finish fourth and they, you know, win a series, it'll have been the best non-LeBron season in like two generations.
Literally in 30 years. They have not made the playoffs in 25 years without LeBron James. They have not won a playoff series in 30 years without LeBron James.
So that has to be recognized. Like if they get in, they will. That's a major accomplishment. If they win a series, it's a major, major accomplishment.
For sure.
But then looking forward, that's where we get a little. It gets
well, and I think mentioning the development of Evan Mobley, that's the exact place you got to start with that conversation.
Well, it's the starting point and the end point, both.
Right, and he's 21 years old. Right, so certainly there's a ton of room for growth. He's a phenomenal defensive player who has not made. I thought there might be a leap this year on the other end of the floor. He's improved, but not significantly. And the biggest issue is he's still a total non-shooting threat. And so if you're going to play him with Jared Allen, which obviously, you know, defensively, it's a phenomenal duo, but it just, they're going to have significant spacing challenges. It's not really that different. In terms of the challenges, as it was when Donovan Mitchell was playing on the Jazz and they were playing Favors at the four, Derek Favors at the four with Rudy Gobert at the five. There's going to be pretty significant spacing challenges at that end that I do think limit the ceiling of this team. And so, hey, Mobley's still young. They say if you watch him at the practice facility, you would think he's a better shooter than he is, which is low 20% from three. But at some point they might have to, see what the market is for Jared Allen and decide to, change up the roster by trading a really good player.
Well, Jared Allen did not perform well last night. Jared Allen perform well against the 76ers.
Well, Jared Allen has never had a good game against Joel Embiid. He's a really good player. And if you only watch him play against Joel Embiid, it's a rough highlight film. And that's obviously a lot of guys look bad against Joel, but he's just, size-wise, it's just a real problem for him. And Robert Williams and Al Horford both were great last night. And Al Horford went 6-for-8 from three, which highlights another part of the issue with having the two bigs is the Cavs give up a pretty high percentage from 3-point range because teams are getting decent looks against them because they're protecting the rim. They've got those guys back at the rim. They're great at protecting the rim, but they give up open looks. And to McMahon's point about Evan Mobley, I mean, look, they're going to go as far as Evan Mobley developed. And to me, there's one of two paths he's going to go. One is he goes the Jaren Jackson, Miles Turner path, which is Jaren Jackson made the All-Star team. Miles Turner's been a borderline All-Star, really good player, really talented player, helps you win a lot of games, but isn't a generational franchise-changing player. The other path is he becomes Chris Bosh, and he's a guy who's a top 10 player in the league, is a first or second All-NBA caliber player, is a two-way impact player who could score 28 and 12 for you a game, and he can be the best player on an awesome team. And then you've got him and Donovan Mitchell and Darius Garland and Jared Allen. And then you have a chance to make a real run. But it goes back to what I said at the beginning when I compared them with Phoenix. The rest of their roster is just not very good. I mean, they're playing Isaac Okoro at the three last night. He is just not good enough. Jason Tatum absolutely demolished them. They have probably the biggest hole at their fifth spot of any good team in the league. It's going to be hard for them to replace that because they're way over the cap going forward. And no picks to trade. And the other thing too is you talked about, you know, they're sort of in the middle of Dallas and Phoenix because they made the big Donovan Mitchell trade. Great move for them to make. They've got this young core, chance to add him and see where it goes. But it's not quite at the point where Dallas is, where Kyrie can leave in 6 months. But if we're just being realistic about it, Donovan Mitchell's 2.5 years from free agency. So there's a limited window for them.
He's 1.5 years from free agency.
Right. So you've got a limited window where you can show, All right, we are a championship level team. This is a place where, you know, we can get Donovan to commit, or do we have to start, you know, trying to look at, you know, what do we do from there? And I'm not trying to tear apart the Cavs. They're a fun team, but it's like, this is the realistic thing you have to look at if you're looking at it.
But if you look at it that way, you say, hey, is it worth giving up what we gave up to get Donovan Mitchell to have a guaranteed couple-year window? What would it be? I think a three-year window to say, hey, let's see how good we can be. And then if you're concerned it's not good enough, we don't know if he's going to resign here, you can turn around and flip him and probably get back
a lot.
Similar value, right? And still have Darius Garland and Evan Mobley, you know, depending on what you've done with Jared Allen, maybe Jared Allen as well. So I think either way, it's not like it's a, oh my God, they might have, you know, I'll say this, the Hawks took a much bigger risk with DeJounte Murray. Didn't give up as much, but like that's one where they might end up losing him for nothing. The Cavaliers aren't going to be in a position. They might have to make a tough decision, but I don't think they're in a position where they aren't able to, if Donovan Mitchell's not there long-term, where they just lose him for nothing.
No, and they had three young, really good players and added him to the mix. Like, and they have all those guys under contract for a long time. Like that was a great move for them to make. They're never getting a guy like Donovan Mitchell in free agency. And it's why I liked that move for them much more than, say, the Knicks trading for Donovan Mitchell at the time, because the Knicks didn't have the same level of young core around those guys. This also, by the way, as Brian mentioned, what sets up maybe the most fascinating first round series in the league if it comes off, because the Knicks are playing great. And if we have Knicks Cavs in the first round and Donovan Mitchell coming back to New York playing at the Garden in a playoff series, that's going to be awfully fun to watch. Because, and those teams also had great games this year too and match up really well. And I think it would be a great basketball series with lots of off the court drama. So that would be super, super fun.
I think it'd be a lot of fun, but I was going to say 4-5 series. If it's Suns Warriors, I think that's going to take the cake.
Fair point. But it would be pretty great.
So the thing is, the Cavs are kind of at the crossroads of the modern NBA. They have had the number one defense in the league for most of the year. And they've had a good net rating, which historically is great indication of the quality of your team because of those two bigs. They play
Cavs are, just real quick on that point to emphasize it, Brian, there's only two teams in the league with a better than +5 net rating, lowest number in 25 years. The Celtics at 5.8, the Cavs at 5.4.
Right. And that's because those two bigs are so awesome defensively. But because of where the league is, where there's so many teams out there that can stretch the floor, and because that the Cavs' primary weapons are sort of smaller guards, which need you to have more dynamic bigs offensively, it goes against what you kind of need. So, like, for example, when the Cavs are in clutch time, and we've had long conversations on this podcast about the value of clutch time, they have the 20th offense in the league. In the clutch. Look, by the way, the 76ers are 22nd. It's not the be all end all. But they have trouble in close games because they rely so much on Donovan Mitchell and Darius Garland to make something happen in just driving to the basket or creating for their own. And the opposing teams don't usually have to guard whoever the three is, and they don't have to space the floor when the Cavs' best lineup is out there. So you have two perimeter players who need space because they can't create their own shots effectively because they're not 6'8". And you have a couple of guys that you don't have to guard space with. And so the reason that they're in fourth place is the exact reason why they're in trouble at the end of games. And the end of and you know, by the way, a lot of times at the end of games, the game isn't close because they have the second best net rating in the league, because over the first 43 minutes, they get their job done. But in the postseason, that's not going to be the case. And we've seen it against the Celtics and 76ers in the last few weeks. Now, let me just say, both those games are road games. The Cavs, we get to play at home. The Cavs are one of the league's best teams at home. So, but, you know, I think that, you know,
it's because nobody wants to go to Cleveland.
The Cavs want to be there. They're just not there yet. And I don't know how they're going to get there. So check out Bontemps' story. We don't write about the Cavs much on NBA or on ESPN.com. But okay. Thank you, Bontemps. Thank you, McMahon. I'll see you in a couple of days. Thank you to Jackson and Bruce, our producers. And we'll talk to you again
back
on Monday.
Back on Monday, hot off the presses after this big KD Kyrie dap up session in Dallas. Yeah.
Oh, listen, yeah. It can't be anywhere near as sweet and emotional as the Kyrie LeBron embrace post 27-point meltdown. Boy, that was, that was nice. That was big smiles. Hey, that's going to be the kind of embrace. That's going to be the kind of embrace that I have for Wendy when I see him. Apparently now I have to hire security for Saturday's dinner. I didn't realize the level of celebrity that I'm dealing with.
Where I'm staying. Why don't you announce what flight I'm on?
It's a really tough life when McMahon to be Windhorst, right? International celebrity. It's hard. It's really hard.
I don't even know where the private jets fly into, much less which one you're on. So like what? And I offered for him to stay in our guest room, but he says he's 5-star hotels only.
Wow. Yeah. What a man.
It was a 5-star hotel in Charlotte.
IT department should be offended by that.
Let me tell you about the 5-star hotel I stayed in Charlotte. I stayed in my friend's basement. All right. Thank you. Thank you for listening to Hoop Collective. We'll talk to you later. Have a good weekend.
Adios, amigos.